That's the 30 years.
Yeah, that 30. Is cool friendship.
30 years.
We've been through treasure
a lot,
it.
A lot of stupid 30. Shit.
Yeah.
Let's sync this up real quick. Yeah. I'm enjoying what you guys are talking about. That's a pretty good clap. Usually it's a little wimpy. So you guys said
you,
30 years of friendship here?
Yeah.
30 years.
Freshman year of high school when he showed up from Idaho, right?
Yeah.
In my, we were in algebra class. Mrs. Anderson.
I don't even remember that. But yeah, whatever you say.
Yeah, it sounds good. It's, yeah, just trust me, it's true.
Good time. Well, welcome back to another episode of the Lookout Podcast. I am joined by Benji Hegg, Dave McClay Schulte, and Laura Ward is back. And it's kind of the opposite of the last time. Last time we were in a sauna in the old Airstream. And I was telling even CJ, I was like, we were baking and Laura didn't even flinch until like after everything was done. And then we both kind of aired out and it was fine. I'm like, Laura is one of the toughest people I know.
Yeah, wear a dress and cotton underwear.
That's the key.
Natural fibers. Natural fibers.
Well, see, yeah, these guys could attest to how tough you are. And then you guys started in fire working for Laura. Is that kind of how this connection came?
Not the original start.
No.
Eventually, I migrated to Laura, but it took eight years maybe before I started.
Yeah, you were on the Hot Shot crew and at Missoula.
I went to Nine Mile, I think, in 2006 on a detail. That was the first time that I worked for you, with you.
Yes, and I remember the first time I met you, we were on a burn, and you had been hired by Ramirez.
Ramirez.
Pronounced correctly. And you were on the side of the road as I was driving up in my pickup. And had a big old fucking Benji smile on your face.
I wear it well.
The best.
Yeah,
the best.
Yeah.
And we're like, hi. I just stopped. I'm like, who the hell are you?
Like, I'm your new employee.
Oh, yeah. Well, welcome.
I probably didn't know who you were either at that moment.
Nope.
That's awesome. It's like 25-year-old me.
You're 25 at that point?
I think that's that. 06? Yeah, I would have been 25.
Yeah.
Mm.
A minute ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like 19 years ago.
Didn't make it to your wedding. Wanted to.
It's okay. I made
Someone
it.
Had to be DO that day. It was probably you.
I was in Sula on a fire.
Oh.
So, yeah. I think I learned what Amazon was that year and Amazoned you a gift.
Perfect.
That's awesome.
I'm sure that my lovely wife said thank you.
For the both of you.
You have two beautiful kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they adore you.
Oh, that's right. I taught them how to spit and swear.
Oh, yes. Auntie Laura is known quite well at our house.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, well, you got to go.
Yeah, you got to pull it behind it. You got to pull it behind that.
It was always the fine balance of, like, do you guard the children from seeing Laura?
I forget. Oh, and the wet.
Yeah, just let it go, yeah.
What do you...
The wet willies.
The wet willies.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, man. I forgot all about that.
You're such a positive.
I know.
Fond Laura Ward memories in our household.
That's what I was thinking.
I like little kids. They're moldable.
Oh, they're moldable. I was thinking that Benji probably wrenching on something. All of a sudden, wet willy. Come on, over. Laura!
Pretty much.
Yeah.
That's about how it goes.
That is awesome.
That's been my last 19 years right there.
Yeah.
Summed up.
Yeah.
Don't
every wet
so.
Willie, I think, Laura Ward.
Yeah, thank you, Laura.
That's awesome. Somebody should get wet Willie.
Where's that? McClay?
I'll pass.
Just I don't remember when we met.
It would have been.
I remember all the support you provided over the years.
It would have been, so I showed up in Nine Mile under Scott Spaulding on the Fisheries crew in 01.
Oh, okay.
That's where it would have started. And then I got my red card that year and mostly, my first fire was with Elmo, honestly.
Oh, so Elmo.
I don't even know where the heck it was anymore, but he took me out, and that was my first fire. And then, we just kind of, I don't know, you were always there. I really can't explain it any other way.
I think both my husband and I had this idea that you had to be present to win if you were in a leadership role of any type in fire. And that meant you didn't pick your assignments. You took your assignments. And you just did the grind there every day. Mm-hmm. And luckily, the state didn't take our children away from us. So we have three wonderful kids.
Just teach them independence is all right.
One's an attorney, one's a social worker, and one is a bartender in Bozeman.
Man, see,
got
it all.
We like you were the FMO in 9 Mile when I was working fisheries, honestly. And then, like we discussed earlier, when I did not get hired in 03 because the fisheries crew fell apart, I tried to jump contract, and I called you about the red card. Yeah, it's here on my desk, and then that contract gig fell through, and so I never came out to get it. And then in 04, when I got back on out of Plains, you told me that it sat on your desk all summer long.
I was worried about you, apparently, dude. We gotta get this guy's red card, this firefighter we need.
It's been stuck in my memory ever 21 years later that, you probably should have followed through on that.
Damn it.
Yeah, pretty much. But that was what that showed to me was that, like, the fact that you remembered me alone from that interaction, and then 2 years later to tell me, hey, it was on my desk the whole time, that meant a lot to me.
Obviously. Oh, cool.
It did.
Cool, because, when you're 60, you don't... Wait, how did we meet? I do know your name, though. I know why we call you Hyphen.
You can thank Dave Pettis for that.
Yeah.
When you're on a district and there's two Daves, the lower man, the totem pole, gets the nickname.
I know, like when we first started jumping together, I wasn't quite sure what your full name was because you had to mention this hyphen and that's where it was for a while.
There are people that don't know my real name.
I would think so.
Yeah, I got an email the other day from a coworker from way back. He was trying to introduce me to somebody else, and he's like, "I call him this, but I'm not sure if that's okay. But this is his real name."
This is the name that's in the system.
this is what he goes by legally.
It's funny because I call you depending on like where I catch her in my brain. I guess where it's functioning, it'll be like, "Dave, how we doing?" Or "Schulte, how we doing?" McClay, one of the three like Rolodexes through my brain and whatever like sticks. I just blurt it out whenever I see you.
Yeah, I have a hyphenated name back from before it was cool. Back from 1980. That's how old I am, then depending on the social circle, I got different names in different circles.
Which
is just beautiful.
It is beautiful.
That sounds very hyphen-esque.
That's what I keep hearing. It's like, for whatever it has been, the last like 1 month or month and a half, people keep like referencing, well, it's very, like, it's just like very hyphen-esque. And I'm like, is there something I'm not aware? Apparently, there's things that I do that are people know that I'm not even aware of that keeps getting thrown back to the hyphen.
Oh, it's
stuff.
A compliment. I think you're very flexible, and I do. I mean, you helped us out on the Lolo through fatalities by coming and talking to people at their hardest times in that situation, and that's not something a lot of people can do. And that's very hyphen-esque.
That was 17.
That was a horrible year.
A tough year. I remember it was really hard for me professionally and honestly personally that year. So being coordinating the peer support team that summer, like when July 19th happened, that was all I did for, because we got through the we got through Trenton's fatality on the Florence, and then the Lolo Peak fire fatality happened like, 2 weeks, almost to the day, if not the day afterwards. And that was what I did for, I think it was close to 6 weeks. It was a collateral duty, and it was at that point, it wasn't collateral. That was what I was doing, and it was pretty tough.
And for, Justin was
less than a year inside of that too, and he had three tree strike fatalities that impacted the Lolo National Forest in less than 1 year. It was hard.
That was not the way I ever envisioned, like, that stage of a career. But it's so much more real, common, expected, and almost accepted now, which bothers me a bit.
Absolutely.
The tree strike realm. So where I am now at the Technology and Development Center, like, I evaluate equipment after something happens, and tree strikes are. I mean, I wasn't aware of how many there are, but they're sadly.
Gravity sucks.
It does.
It really does.
And gravity's gonna win.
Rocks and trees and
rolling stuff. It's really helped me understand that, like, Wildland's a hell of a dynamic environment, and you can plan for the best, but things are going to happen that you can't predict, and it's quite humbling to realize how small you are in that big world, you know?
Yeah.
I just saw a video on a burn that happened just a few days ago. I believe it was on the Bitter, and Roller came out and, you know, came right next to it. Someone was lighting, you know, an igniter, and, like, they just kind of, oh, and kept cruising. And, I mean, it would have done some damage, you know, like, severe
ragdolled
damage.
Ragdolled them.
Yeah, if it would have connected, because it was a rock. I mean, like, size somewhere between a basketball and a beach ball. And, it, like, the way his response to it was how I would have been, and it's weird how you just kind of get, like, numb to it. You just get used to it, like, oh, no big deal. Because you burn out stuff like this, you know, that's this
steep. Yeah, it becomes normal.
Yeah, you just normalize it all. Like, I remember and the Gallatin being on a fire, and this big, and I just barely heard a pop, and all of a sudden this giant, like, 24 dBH tree or something bigger just come floating by me. Didn't touch the ground because it popped way up here. It was so steep, it just floated down. I was just like, that was wild. But it was like August, you know, I was wore out, you know, into August or September, and I was just like, that was weird. And just kept cruising, you know.
Yeah, where the whole tree impact thing really started, came home to me, was actually 2010. We got the Steve Corner fatality happened.
Oh, yeah.
And that was stuff. So we were looking at peer support on that. So I went off the jump list, went on hold for that. And then it kind of didn't develop into anything. So I went back on the list. And then we got called as a 10-person assist crew.
I don't either.
I wish I could.
I
know. I used to have Ann V. Seth.
And Visa,
because her brother, I think, rookie the year before that or something.
And that was over on Idaho.
It was on a and then we got
state fire.
So the peer support thing never came together because it was just anyway. Sometimes that happens, which is fine. But we got called. I went back on the list, and we got called to go as a sent a 10-person module over there. So I went to that like a week afterwards, and I was in that terrain, like, they couldn't tell us where the site was because the investigation was ongoing, but, like, it's over here, and you're going to be in the same area. And I was like, okay. So 10 of us doing it, and, like, you're in that country, and there's all of these cedars that are burning, and that's when I really, it truly came home to me how, honestly, scary cedars can be. Like,
oh, my God.
Working
in Oregon, I hate fucking cedars. But I hate gravity worse.
I know. As far as trees are concerned, I really love the cedar tree. But as far as cedars and fire, there was multiple instances on that fire where you're within 10 feet of the cedar tree and it was 36 inches DBH, you know, and you don't even know it's roasting inside. You walk to the other side and that whole thing is just burning.
Yeah.
It's 2 inches.
Yeah. And it's rind out. It's rind out. And you're looking at that and you're like, what do we do now? Like, how do we handle this? Well, we can't cut into it because it's so hot. So that's when it all came home to me that, like, there's a lot with trees, and especially, you know, obviously cedar trees. And that's where I started trying to pay more attention. Like, overhead hazards were a serious thing. And because I hadn't really, I was 29 in 2010. And I was still under the invincible ideal. And that's when it started to come home that, no, I was on a fatality fire from a cedar tree. And there are these cedar trees.
Yeah.
You don't even know from 10 feet away or on fire. And that's when it started to come home, like, there's a lot going
on
here.
And then
when we ended up cutting trees down on that fire to make it to actually so we could do our job, how those things, like you said earlier, shoot to the bottom. Mm-hmm. Like, they're hitting the bottom of the canyon.
Yeah.
Hundreds of feet below us.
Yeah.
And then you have your own kids into the mix, and now your outlook completely changes. And it's pretty wild how you can just shift throughout your career, how your outlook changes and how you do the job changes and what you think is acceptable risk changes.
Yeah.
I mean, your kids are older than mine, Benji. How did it impact you?
Oh, I mean, that's the thing that pops into your head is like all the things that used to be normal and that you do on a daily basis really makes you think about the risk and the gain and like what happens if something happens.
Yeah.
You leave your family without you.
Yeah, it's
makes quite, it pretty real.
It's quite frightening, honestly. Like, it is.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know how you did it for as long as you did.
Yeah,
Laura.
I had a great husband who also did it, and we understood each other and understood the risks. Mm-hmm. After a while, for me, my wake up call was the Derby fire.
Oh,
and we were on the
Derby
fire.
That's one of my.
That was your Dozer Boss, right?
bigger learning points in my young fire career was that fire.
Is that 03?
That was 06.
06? Okay, I was off a little bit.
So I learned a little later in my career because what happened is I was kind of flying solo as an operations section chief in my pickup on a ridgeline, calling in seats, and one of them, the air attack, anyways, the seat just dumped on me in my pickup truck, not where I wanted it. And I was in the back of my pickup with my gear and shit just going, what the fuck am I even doing this for? Jesus Christ. And Jim was on a fire somewhere else. We had three kids at home. Like, this... Yeah, I'm not getting supported and doing my job, and I'm out here doing this because that was a fucked up fire from where we were sitting.
That was a fire.
It was a team. We were the team. Type 2 team was there, not to be named.
Both spike camp, limited support.
With no support. I would say no fucking support. Fire
behavior you've never seen before in Region 1. Like, it was...
That was before we had the column collapse on us and burned up all the houses and found people in the creek and the engine and everything else. And at the end of that, I came home like... 15 pounds lighter. Jim came home 20 pounds lighter from wherever he was, and we were both like, Jesus Christ, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And it wasn't because we didn't believe in the job or the mission, but he was doing air attack, I think, at that time, which is a tough fucking job.
Really tough job.
And he was new at it, I think. And he's like, holy shit. Sucks. I'm saying the same thing. It's like, what are we doing? We were trying to perform at the top of our field in our profession, trying to be good at what we were doing and not feeling supported. And I can't imagine what it feels like now, because that was 2006 and I wasn't feeling supported by the team, but I go back to my job and I certainly still had a budget and we still had all the firefighters we needed on the Lolo and all this shit.
Yeah.
Now it's different not to change the trajectory of the conversation, but that air attack job is tough.
Very tough.
I was a trainee and I'm like, fuck it. I can't do this in ops. I can do one or the other.
Yeah, it's definitely different now compared to when Jim went through it.
Yes.
Like you go through the training, you know, having gone through the training, like you go to the academy, you go through 2 weeks of like intensive resetting your brain on how to think. And so when you come out of that, you're leaps and bounds ahead of where people were 15 years ago when they went through it. I can't even imagine, you know, like for Jim going through it when he did, like the transition of trying to go from thinking like a ground firefighter to thinking like both realms of aviation and ground compared to the training you get now. There's no comparison.
Yeah, it needed to become that specialized position that is housed. Yep.
And like now, you know, the people that go to the academy, like I was in the 5th academy for it, and like you're really set up for success from the get-go, because like you've got the time and the energy and the assets put into it, and then your supervisors support it, and like that's what you do. You go to the training, and you go through it, and then you do it. Versus when Jim did it, it wasn't in the academy, it wasn't the training. It's like you did the S class, and then you just kind of like did it as you could, but you didn't have that in depth that people get now, and that's different, and that means a lot for that level of stress and management and how you get through it.
My husband's looking for me.
Yeah, I texted him too. I was like, "Hey Jim, we have Laura. We're in the trailer."
Yeah, it's Ted.
Thanks.
Yeah, you can jump in if he wants to.
Jimmy, want to come in? Come join us.
That'd be fun.
Well, yeah, I won't keep you guys too long then. But I kind of
he can wait.
Yeah.
This is going to be a multi-episode. That's what I have to do it like once a year.
After every putt and pull, we'll just sit down.
We almost did it last year. Almost.
That's what I was going to say. That's kind of how this started.
They kicked us out. That's what we're doing last year.
I should have. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know it's kind of worried about the time and like you said, they were kicking us out, and I was like, and that's why I was like. When you guys came and got me today, I was like, okay, maybe Laura, I figured you were going to be heading for home already. So like, that's why we're on the block and like was about to get on reserve. And then you're like, hey, where are you at?
I'm like, hey, are you coming back? What are we doing? This or what?
Hey, we made this happen.
Yeah, this is great. So yeah, just for the audience, I just want to say how this started last year. And like you were saying, Benji, like we'll just maybe just do a little snippet every year and keep this rolling. Cause
it's a good group to do a snippet with.
Yeah.
I yesed him on my watch. Yes. I'm so proud of myself.
It's so when you mentioned the derby fire, like I spoke to Benji about that and like all of the stuff that was going on. And it's funny because at that moment, when he told me about it back in, this would have been fall of 06, he was telling me about the derby fire. And I was like, I felt disappointed that I wasn't involved in it. Like that sounds like it's a great fire to test your mettle to see if I can do it kind of thing, you know? And then having found myself in similar situations since then, like, fuck that. Like it's like
that was like I my just, whole fucking career do. Just throw her yeah see what happens
that was,
you go out there and do something with this fire
yeah
that was me
go light this
fresh off of the hotshot crew had never functioned singly ever.
You did awesome. I was worried about you though.
Yeah, you thought I died at one point.
I did. Yeah, we're out there on that ATV and it's like, where the fuck is Benji?
Well, I remember we can't lose
that furry little fuck.
At one point,
patch lives on,
you had given me the set of structures and you're like, here you go, figure it out. And I was like, all right, so like I had a dozer.
You were apparently capable.
Between all these houses. like the way this fire blew up, it was like, there's nothing.
Doesn't matter.
It didn't matter what you did. It was like if it burned, it burned.
The river didn't matter. The highway didn't matter. Nothing mattered.
And so this column collapses, cold front blows over, this fire just does things you've never seen before. And we ride it out at this ranch, and then it's like, all right, like fire front's blown through, like let's go see what we can do.
Yeah.
And we start going house to house, and I remember this one house in particular. We're on the radio, you're talking to me, and like I keyed my mic, and as I keyed my mic, the garage just exploded. I mean, 200-foot fireball.
Holy
shit. Like, they had diesel, gas, vehicles, like, everything.
It's as California as you get in
Montana. No, seriously. it was like the Stillwater River drainage.
Yeah, it is.
And so I'm 50 feet from this garage, and I, like, she said something on the radio, and I keyed my mic, and it went, boom! Like, oh, God. And, like, I let go of the mic, and she's like, Hank Ward! Which probably took 2 seconds, but I'm just like, oh my God, I've never seen this before. And they're like, hey, I'm good. But dude, I mean,
that was the house we used as a base.
Yeah, it was that.
And
that
we had a lot of fuel because it was such an unsupported spike camp. Yeah. We had a lot of fuel in the back of our rigs, and we all knew we were going to deal with this collapsing column. It was forecasted.
It was
we
a
knew
known
this.
Event oh, yeah. that was about to happen.
So we put all this fuel
at that
place because we had to get it out of our vehicles to keep operating.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. And they weren't, it was so bad. We were so unsupported. They weren't jerry cans. They were like water containers full of fuel.
At one point, was so when I first
we were not
fire,
supported.
When I first
and the
IMT fire,
will remain unnamed.
When I first went to the fire, I was a palm IR operator, is what she brought me over as.
And I knew his name.
Because it was small.
I knew him at that time.
And it hadn't blown up yet, right?
Yeah.
And by the end of this fire, she's like, hey, I need torch fuel. She's like, go to the spike camp and make me torch fuel. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
So I go back and like very limited support.
Yeah.
Like how you and so the torch fuel that I got was 5 gallon buckets. This is the hot buckets of food.
No. Yeah.
There
yeah.
was no
hot
there,
buckets with fuel.
There were no fuel cans.
That's why
there
we had
no
to
drip
leave
torches.
It.
There was nothing. And so
we
like
have that in
I go
the back
to the
of
supply
our
at the spike and they're like, we don't have any fuel cans. And I
Holy
go to the
shit.
Caterer and he's like, I got all these hot buckets with like turkey and gravy. I was like, sweet, give them to me.
We weren't even getting fed.
No, we weren't getting
IEPs. I was just figuring out the briefing in the morning off of whatever I had.
It was full, like, winged survival mode.
Yeah, it was bad.
I have not had a situation that bad.
Me either.
It seems like that's all I ever dealt with.
No.
So basically, don't take an asylum with you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Unless you want to learn everything.
Well, the inverse.
I learned everything. I mean, the half of what I know came from events like that, which is like...
I mean, like, it's unfortunate, but at the same time, you make it happen,
and like,
keep people safe.
It gives you slides of what to do in those scenarios.
True. So here's something I shared. I do work with USAID. Been recently shit canned by Elon. Fed to the wood chipper. But I did a workshop recently with. Disaster response people in the Bahamas. And it was all about how to organize and your ESFs and, you know, how to make sure you're pre-planning. And I'm like, these people deal with huge fucking hurricanes.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, there is a hard truth here. Sometimes nature's just going to fucking win and kick your ass.
Yeah.
And you're going to do the best you can with what you have. Now, we could have certainly been supported better on Derby.
But when it came down to it.
Yeah.
And that's what nature's going to do what nature's going to do.
But you bring up a good point. Like, what I really, really love about the wildland firefighter community is their ability to turn shit into lemonade.
Yeah.
And we've done that so many times. And then, and then when things do go bad... The support this community has for each other just, I don't know why it keeps blowing my mind, but it does. The amount of support this community can put towards each other is...
Without a doubt.
It's, I mean, I can't think of a community that can match it, honestly. Like, it's
yeah, and
really
like,
great.
Those, when your tank's at like zero, like your personal tank, you know, like your personal fuel tank's at zero on like something like the Derby, and you're able to just like keep cruising because the guy or gal next to you is kicking ass too, and you're like, well, if I falter... Then we all falter. So it's like, I gotta keep my shit together. And you're running like no sleep, no food. I mean, like you said, Dave, it's impressive to see like people find that gear that I think everyone has it, like everyone in the whole population, but no one has to really tap into it that often. And like as firefighters, we've had to do it time and time again. And you learn to operate, I think, at a pretty high level when your fuel tank's empty. It's really impressive and like kind of heartwarming in a way to see it, like where you're like leaning on someone next to you a little bit and then they lean back on you and all those things, you know.
It's really impressive to watch, but where I'm going to dive into some personal stuff here, where it gets difficult is when people can't
go anymore.
Well, when they don't recognize that they are on empty personally and professionally, and then it all comes to their head.
Yeah.
And it gets, and like, I'll go back to the peer support side of the fence. Like I originally, when I first started
you have a great burn glass or Highlander glass.
When I
souvenir
like donation to the cause.
Yeah, exactly.
When I first started managing the team, all we did for our presentations about, hey, this is who we are and this is how you can order us and this is kind of what we do. And then having gone through a bunch of negative outcomes is the best way to put it, I realized that we have significant holes in our understanding, or at least our communication about what we're dealing with and what we're going through.
Yeah.
So I started incorporating things into my presentation about like stuff that I'd experienced, that it was a struggle for me, and that I know I'm not alone in this kind of stuff. And I brought in, I mean, just the stress of the job. You guys are talking about the Derby fire in 06, and like, I'm sure the fact that you're still talking about it, it's probably still riding with you.
Well, that was a long time ago, and your experiences since then. I mean, I've been out for 5 years.
Yeah.
There's been so much more.
You carry it. That's the point. You carry it.
Yeah, you have those slides that you get at some point in your career that, like, it just gives you stuff to compare to and to build off of and things that you learn from and kind of shapes, like, where you go from there.
It does. It shapes your operational picture.
Yeah.
But when you look at the personal picture, we don't have a lot of structure and guidance in that realm, and that's where I've seen a lot of people falter, myself as well. And it can get, we don't firefighters are horrible at introspection.
That is so why bad. I even brought that fire up. That was that seminal moment for me in my career and whatever fire Jim was on when we came back home and together. It's like, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah. But we're so bad at it, and then we just keep...
aha moment for your own persona.
And we keep pushing forward because
we
that's the job.
We got better life insurance. We really did.
Yeah. Truly. Uh-huh. Yeah, and you look at it from that standpoint, it's like, okay, like it brings home the realities of what you do. And then so many folks go through these hard situations, and like they get through professionally, but personally they carry it on.
Yeah.
And then how does that impact outside of the job? And that's... where I started incorporating what I was experiencing into my presentations in the peer support team. Like, hey, this is stuff that people are seeing. Like, why don't we talk about this? Like, I mean,
Work is so valuable.
And I have since retired from that, if you will, just because I can't do my current job and that job. They don't coincide. And it was time. I had, looking back now, I had hit the point where I'd had enough where I needed to step away for a while. And honestly, the biggest trigger for that was 17.
Oh my God, that was because
that was such a terrible year. Like, they use the term compassion fatigue, and I always thought that was a joke. I'm like, that sounds dumb. And then, come September in 17, I was like, yeah, I know what it means now. Like, the team was maxed out. We had no more leads. The coordinator was done. Our leads were done. We had peer support. We had the peers, but I actually reached out to the national program. Like, we can't anything else. You've got to support us. Yeah. And it was a hard. I mean, it wasn't just the fatalities. It was that year was huge across the region for fire.
Yep.
Everybody was running on empty. And it really drove home to me the importance of, like, you've got to look outside the job. You can perform your job operationally, but if you're not taking care of yourself personally, the cost is significant. And that was a big year for my realization in that realm. And I had to do some work to get through it. It was...
I bet.
It was like having not been on any of the fires where these fatalities occurred, what I carried from it, from my response, was, to me, striking. And because I didn't believe in that whole aspect, but I do now. Like, you have to take care of yourself, because just what you experience and what you go through, whether it's whether you were there or not, you're helping people through it. You're taking some of that on, and you have to be able to unload it, or it will weigh you down.
Exactly. It just piles up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the nature of things. Everybody's got personal experience that plays into the event. But you can put people in a high stress situation where you're asking like a 19-year-old kid to lead people in a dynamic environment. And like, it's a lot of stress that we don't really teach our people to deal with well.
Yeah.
And we're starting to. We're turning that corner, which is fabulous. Yeah. We are getting around that corner. But the lack of introspection in me particularly and firefighters, like, they need to do a... You doing this real quick?
No, you're good. Okay. You keep talking. Let's take a picture.
We just need to make sure that, like, people need to take care of themselves, or they will find themselves in a bad spot later in life. And, like,
absolutely. And I, you know, to tack on that a little bit, it's just the R&R days. Like, typically, especially at home, you get like one R&R day because you want to make as much money as you can. So it's not like a whole lot of time to, like, do some introspection and, like, just pause for a hot second and be like, all right, how am I doing? How are things going? You know,
hardly
am I getting enough
time to breathe?
Yeah.
Well, that's the wonderful, well, I call it wonderful, it's facetiously, but when you're a wildland fire, especially in the lower realms, like lower ranks, like overtime is where you make it through the winter.
Yep.
So you have to be gone to make the money. But where it gets really wonderful is after you start, you're young and you're dumb and it's great. This is the best thing. I'm seeing all this cool stuff, do all these cool things, right?
Yeah.
Which was, I love it all. But all of a sudden you find yourself married and then kids show up. And now guess what becomes a problem? Being gone.
Yeah.
You know what you have to do to make it work?
Be gone.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the sacrifice for?
Yeah.
Like, we all do it. We all pay for it one way or the other.
Yeah, man.
But it's like you hit that point in your career where it's like, why?
Oh yeah. I can tell you the exact moment. I came back from Miles City. I did the Ram Air transition stuff in, 16. So I was in... did the week or two in Missoula, and then I was 3 weeks in Grangeville doing that, and I came back. I was home for 6 days. I went to Miles City for 34 days.
Yeah. Oh, ouch.
So I'm
first Miles City in 34 days.
I know. But I had a great time. That's fun country. But like, you don't really, it's like I said, lack of introspection. You don't realize the impact it's having at home. And I came home from that. I got home like 2 days before my son's first birthday, And I was all excited, like, oh, my little buddy, you know? And I go to give him a hug, and he's like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah, kind of guarded.
Yeah, and I was just, it hit me. I was like.
That's when it hits you.
I was like, holy crap. Like, so I got it. So I changed it. I was like, because I was always like, hey, the action's here. Like, I've done that go long in place, extend.
Yeah. It's
like, and I talked to some folks back at the base about this, because I was like, it really hurt me. And I got some fantastic advice from Charles Savoia.
Yeah.
And these are the 2 points. He's like, one, he's like, hey, it's like, don't say anything about how your house is operating until you're home for 7 consecutive nights. So you don't say shit for the fire season. Yeah. Like, that's, and two, he's like, don't go beyond 21 days. And I implemented that, and it made things, because who am I to say you're, like, I don't like how you're operating things, but I'll be here for 24 hours and I'll be gone again for the night. Like, who am I to say that? So it made absolute sense. And I started incorporating that into my presentations. I'm like, hey, like, I know I'm not the only guy dumb enough and stepping on myself and doing this stuff. Like, let's get this word out there. People need to help themselves so they can have a better home life when the season ends.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just come home and support as you can. And then when you leave, and leave on good terms too, right?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, honestly, when the job ends, because the job's going to end for everybody.
Yeah.
It will. The ones at home are the ones that you need to have that relationship with, and I was neglecting that.
Yeah.
Unbeknownst, I thought I was doing great. Introspection, shitty.
Wasn't. Yeah. Yep.
And that's where it came home. I was like, I need to focus more here and find that as much as you can as a GS6, find the balance between overtime and home, which, you know, it's tough.
Yeah.
At best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It becomes real when your partner expresses that they're a single parent. And you're like, no, I'm not. You're not a single parent. Like, we're married. Like, I'm the other parent. And it's like, oh.
How did, so, Laura, I've got a question.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
It makes it pretty real pretty quick.
How did you handle the integration when the fire season was over back into the home life? Because, I mean, your partner, Jim, obviously was in fire too. So how did that work? Because personally, I struggle with it.
Yeah.
I would say that the autonomy we had in our working life, assignments, our jobs, we figured that rhythm out. We failed a few times, you know, where I was available with a team, so waiting to get called out, and he took an assignment. That happened a couple of times. We crossed paths on a 100-mile dirt highway and going to Eagle, Alaska. He was coming out as a divs. I was going in as ops on a team. The kids were with Vicky Hughes, which if anybody remembers who that person is, you would question that decision, and her poodles.
It paints a picture.
Yeah.
The poodles are suspect.
So we, I guess the question is, how did we get back in a normal life?
Yeah.
We were just forced into it. When the kids school, we had school and then we had summer. And when school started, then everything changed for one of us, depending on what was going on. We chose our home because it was 5 miles away from Nine Mile Ranger District. When our kids were young and they went to Frenchtown. So it was very easy, relatively. Although there's some stories of children running amok to the local bar, but at 5. And then he did the commute to Superior. Well, first Hot Shots in Superior, that's but he would be the commuter. We agreed and we chose our place to live to make sure somebody could pick up the kids maybe from school. Although we did have Randy's repair take them to school one day that we didn't know about. Anyways, shit happens, man.
That was the repair shop right at the exit?
Randy's repair shop.
Yeah, okay. I know that one.
It is, it's chaos when you have kids. You know that. Yeah. We had 3 of them.
Yeah.
And too many pets.
It's like my house.
Yeah, it's total fucking chaos, man. You talk, you make do, you get the rhythm figured out. But yeah, once school started, I usually, as the FMO at Nine Mile, was able to at least adjust my schedule at that time to show up at 8 instead of 7:30 to make sure the kids got to the bus stop in a vehicle in the middle of winter, which is also an exit off of I-90, which is sketchy. It is literally an exit off of I-90. Yeah. It's the 9-mile exit.
Yeah. Did you have any reintegration back into the family stuff?
Like tips or anything?
Oh, man. Come back to me on that one.
Well, because I asked that question for both of you guys, because you've been in it for long. You were in it for who knows how long.
We were both fire, though. I think it's...
Yeah, I guess that'd be a little...
It's a little easier when you both, understand the expectations of the job.
Yeah.
So, my bride, I've been married to her for, 15 years now, and her dad did fire out of Harlowton for her life, so she understood the whole gamut and how it operates, yet she just told me last summer that I thought I was good at it. She told me that I was bad at reintegration into the family, and I thought I was doing a good job. Mm-hmm. I put all this time since, started doing the dedication stuff at 17. Like, I'm going to be...
Well, certainly don't show up and tell her how to change shit when you've been gone. First tip.
Definitely done that wrong. And I if she watched, I'm really sorry, honey. but no, I thought I'd, after all of this work that I, realizations that I've had between 16 and 17 going forward, I thought I'd done better at it, but no. Apparently, was not good at reintegration back into the family when the fire season was over, and looking back on it, I can understand why, because of the people that I worked with. You get those, you just don't have bonds like that outside of the fire community. That's why I stayed at the jump base for, when I first started jumping, I was like, I'll do it for 3 years, get a good feel, and move on. 12 years later is when I finally left, and it's because of the family dynamic that was showing me I couldn't do it. And I think for me it was the people. Like, they were the ones that you spend all of this time with them. You go into all of these places, do all this crazy things, and then coming back into just your regular home life.
Can you compartmentalize shit up here?
I did a pretty good job compartmentalizing from the airplane to the ground. I think outside of that, I didn't do a good job. I think because I was even in the summertime, I'm like, okay, what's happening next? I was always looking ahead, and I wasn't living with the people that I'm going to spend my life with.
So I'll give an example of compartmentalizing in my perspective. I have a granddaughter now.
Congratulations.
I'm retired. I swear much less than I did.
Wow.
In my professional life.
I mean, with all due respect,
that's impressive.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, I know.
I've known you for a long time.
The F word is not a verb or an adjective.
Okay.
But Laura, it's all of those things. I'll let my kids know.
Yeah.
I'll let my kids know. Yeah.
I know. I would treat your children differently now if I met them. But
can you meet with my brother and tell him that, please? Yeah.
But that compartmentalizing of your life and your actions and your how you deal with situations, I think, is a very valuable thing in fire. Yeah. And even when you're dealing with the crazy fucking volunteers at Putt and Pole, you're like, Jesus Christ, you talk too much. this would be a lot easier. And then you're like, okay, it's volunteer. Just give them that clipboard and ask them to go do something that means nothing. Just getting control of those emotions that we all feel and understanding what's healthy about them, what isn't. So if that frustration boils up, it's like, this is my reaction to that situation. It's not them. It's my reaction to that situation. I need to put that in its place and respond to it appropriately. And I struggle with it, without a doubt. I just gave you an example of tonight.
it's wild you mentioned compartmentalization, because with all the stuff that's going on lately, there's people that I work with that are really, really concerned, and it's impacting all aspects of their life. And I've mentioned the same thing. Like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm compartmentalizing it. I'm taking all of that, and I'm keeping it here while I work on this. And in the end, knowing that I have to come back to it, because it can't just sit there. But it will. I will put it here for now. I'll work on this, and then I'll come back and work through that.
The chaos you guys are dealing with right now, I don't. I have no point to refer to. It is unique, hurtful, and not effective.
Yeah. Yep. Not a very good way to describe it at all.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Weird times.
And because of what you just said, I mean, that's a different impact than coming home from fire season. I mean, the chaos that has been inflicted on whether you have a job next week or not, or you're responding to the 5 bullet points, or that's totally
challenge to navigate.
and it being done in such a hurtful manner, like just no respect for civil service at all. I don't think people understand how much their federal and state government actually provide for them.
Yeah,
totally. And I'll do an episode on that, sometime soon, I guess, about just like, I think a lot of people have no awareness of what public lands are and the people that steward them, and how they, how they're taken care of in general, I guess. And
they do in Montana, but they certainly don't know Ohio.
It's like, I think but I think they take it for granted.
Yeah.
Right. And like, you don't realize what you have until you lose it. And like, we're on the verge of losing a lot that's not going to be recovered.
No.
Like, people need to wake up and recognize that.
Because, that's my fear. Not as much for my job, but more of like the big picture things, like our kids,
generationally, what is this short period of time really going to look like?
Because as you guys 20
years from now.
Yeah, once you lose something, it doesn't come back. Yeah, especially like a public land.
Especially public land.
Yeah.
And like, case in point, like Montana, right? Like,
yeah.
We've all grown up backpacking and hunting and backcountry skiing and fishing and like enjoying
BLM and staying
forest land. And like, it's easy to lose sight of how good we really have it.
Totally.
Until it's gone.
Yeah. And just like you guys were saying, like Montanans, I think, and most people in the Northwest and probably, west of the Mississippi-ish, a little more west, understand it. But like the folks who just don't have it, like you said, Ohio and east,
that's where you're from?
Dayton.
Cincinnati. The homeland.
There's
not a lot of public land on the east side.
No,
I grew up, I didn't know who Smokey was, never been on a national forest, no national park. I love public lands.
I'm still pissed that in that Smokey jacket that Tony donated. That was gorgeous.
Man, that was from Tony. I just could see it out the window there.
I think his aunt made
made it out of a Pendleton blanket for Risa many years ago. And it's got
the Indian head nickels on it. It's gorgeous.
Really?
It's gorgeous. It is.
And then he showed me some pictures, not to totally change subject, but we're talking about that now.
He
showed me some pictures of she made him an outfit for when he was, for his, when you do certain, like, I don't know if it was ceremonial, I can't recall specifically, but basically his regalia that he would wear and the beadwork on it, it was so pretty. I was like, Tony, can you show me that? He's like, I'll give you a call, bring it in one day. The beadwork is phenomenal on, because in the Southwestern tribes, they do things differently, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm speaking outside my window here, but just what he told me was that, but like, they do things a little bit differently, but the regalia was just, it was gorgeous, and it was also a Tony from 40 years ago, and I was
I looked at my watch. I'm gonna leave.
What time is it?
It's 10:35.
Is it past your bedtime?
We've been up here for almost 50 minutes.
It's past everyone's bedtime. It's even past your bedtime.
It is, yeah.
You gonna make it?
Oh yeah, yeah. I actually gotta swing by Walmart on the way out because I lost a windshield wiper on the way here because of the storm. Like as soon as the storm hit, I hit the windshield wipers and like two gusts hit me, blew both windshield wipers out, and then the second one just took the driver's side one off. And I was like, awesome.
That's funny. I was driving my wife's truck, and her passenger side, the rubber was gone. I was like, I don't make it a stop.
Yeah. Oh, just deal with the rain.
I have to urinate.
Oh yeah. Well, thanks, Laura. I appreciate it.
I've got a joke about urinating. On that note,
yeah, we're done.
I've got a joke about urinating. I'm kind of proud of this one. I don't know if it's mine in particular, but I'm gonna say it right now.
All right.
You ever have to urinate so bad it's a urinine? That's where I am right now, and I gotta go.
And on that note, year 10.
Oh, thank you guys.
I gotta pee, and I'm not doing it by Benji's truck.
Why not?
I'm at the Holiday Inn. It's right down the road. Perfect. I'm using a flush fucking toilet because I'm 60.
Yeah. You know what, Laura? You've earned it.
Absolutely.
You put some time in. We respect it.
Yeah.
You guys are very kind. It's always fun sitting in a trailer with you.
Yeah.
I might be stuck.
You'll make it work.
Oh, well, thanks, guys, and thanks everybody for tuning in.
Thanks, Luke. Oh, we'll try. God. Maybe 365 days later, we'll give her a swing again.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, if you guys are into it.